Hello and welcome to this week's Albion Raw here on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, online at RadioReverb.com, on DAB, and of course on our podcast. I'm AD Packham and we are pondering, if I had the wings of a sparrow, in association with OldFootballShirts.com. Well, last Saturday ended in ultimate frustration after we gifted Huddersfield a point at the Amex. Our continued failure to take our gilt-edged chances is becoming a bit of a problem, and it must be troubling Chris Hughton as we head into a big week when we travel to Castle Grayskull today and then welcome Spurs on Tuesday. We go into those fixtures without the increasingly influential Davey Prepper after we fail to get his red card against the Terriers overturned. Joining me today is, of course, Alan Wares, and we're always delighted to welcome Andy Bass. We'll also hear from Rise UK, and we're also going to hear from some Spurs fan or something. I think his name's what? Gary?
It's O'Gary Hart.
O'Gary Hart.
It's his Irish cousin.
Oh, that's the one. Yep, we've got Gary Hart, who I had a chat with earlier this week. But firstly, Andy, last Saturday, oh dear.
Just tremendously disappointing. I mean, And having watched it back a couple of times since, it's just mystifying to me how we didn't come out of that game with a win. But you just sensed that we were like snatching at things. We felt that, I think, even though we've got another six games to go after this one, you got the feeling that the players kind of felt it might have been their last chance to like get an in quotes easy 3 points, and almost like that occasion seemed to suffocate them a bit, because we had an absolute hatful of chances. Having come out of that game very, very disappointed and pretty irritated with the performance, look back on it and you think, well, you know, if we'd have got five or six, it wouldn't have been outrageous given the amount of chances we had.
Well, we started off like a train, and that chance that Prepper had, I mean, I've got my notes here about the game as usual, and it's proper this, proper that, proper this.
I was about to say, he had an interesting game, didn't they?
And you know, I mean, if he was wearing an orange shirt, that's in the back of the net, I reckon.
It's the number of one-on-ones that we've had recently and made a complete pig's ear of them are actually getting quite frustrating. You'd have been frustrated in the Championship doing that, but knowing full well that there'd have been another chance coming along. In the Premier League, I don't think, I mean, you know, Let's not clutch at straws, but let's hope against hope that it's actually not going to cost us. But we can't actually get away with that so often, missing so many chances that we have. You know, this is possibly the difference between, say, a relegation scrap side and a mid-table side, or maybe a mid-table side and a top side, is that they'll stick away the chances that they should really be sticking away.
But the two one-on-ones we had on Saturday both fell to our leading, our highest transfer people.
Well, I've never go for the consideration as to how much someone costs. I mean, that's irrelevant, and that's nothing to do with the player, but quality.
If you are going to be paying like 15 million quid for someone, 12 million quid for someone, then you'd expect them to be able to put the ball in the back of the net when put through one on one with a goalkeeper.
Well, frankly, I'd expect someone to do it at Preston Park. So the point, I think, is slightly moot.
Andy, if you were in Preston Park, could you do it?
I probably couldn't. But you wouldn't pay 15p for me, so let alone 15 million.
All right, okay.
But I mean, what I would say about that, I think in Prepper's defence, I think he should have scored, but I think that was at greater pace, and I think he was under a little bit more. The defender put him off a little bit more, and he sort of leant back a little bit too much as he tried to curl it around the goalkeeper.
He just knocked it wide. I mean, that's a ridiculous. He's well, 24
he did,
feet
away, well, he Matt. Didn't. He didn't. Knock it from where he was. The goalkeeper was coming out, and he tried to bend it round the goalkeeper. Really, what he should have been doing was getting his foot under it and dinking it over the goalkeeper.
There's any number of things he could do.
But, I mean, he was under a bit of pressure. The Izquierdo one, it's just his first touch was just terrible. I mean,
well, it's just decision making.
It was poor touch.
It was a poor touch. He could have either, you know, actually gone for the shot first time or just taking the ball a little bit wider to genuinely go around the goalkeeper, and the ball just seemed to bump off his foot, and he blew it.
That's what was happening to a lot of players all game. I mean, like, for instance, Prepper, he tried to pass it into the net. Don't get me wrong, what he was trying to do was right, except for the execution in the end. But it was indicative of so many passes in the whole game. And let's face it, I don't think anyone is immune from criticism of this. Everyone misplaced a pass. I mean, horrifically so. Usually the easy stuff. If you're lumping it forward 50 yards, hoping for Glenn Murray's head, fair enough, you're not necessarily going to get it. But when you've got an easy 10-yard pass and it's so sloppily given away to someone who's basically read the pass because he's telegraphed it 5 minutes earlier. That's what he's trying to do. In the case of Izquierdo in the one-on-one, yeah, I think he did the right thing in trying to control it, and then he had the choice of whether to take it past the keeper or dink it. But as Andy said, it just either bobbled or it just went 2 yards too far ahead of where he wanted it, and it allowed the keeper to recover.
I'm still saying it was just poor decision-making.
It was poor control. We've seen it so many times. It was poor control.
It was poor, whatever it was.
Poor.
It was with a decision, poor control, or
with
poor
a capital
decision.
Poo.
But it was poor.
Yeah.
But I mean, you said there was quite a lot of misplaced passes, but there were some also very good ones. And Schelotto, who put it on a plate for Prepo in that first
Absolutely
30
fantastic.
Seconds. March fired home the opening goal where Davy Prepo released this Izquierdo, who has to check, but Proper, who had followed the run, was there to receive the ball and lays off to Gross, who finds March, who sneaks well, it nicks in. So
yeah,
it's Proper.
Oh,
proper.
Absolutely. He is. You're quite right, as your opening note said. He is becoming more and more influential, and you get to realise. And I think this is maybe his confidence was boosted after Alan Shearer's take up of him after the Arsenal game, and saw how him and Stevens were working together so well. Yeah. He seems to have boosted even from that.
Well, we did actually welcome back Dale Stevens in this game, and he did look a little bit rusty.
No better. Yeah, not. You could see he wasn't sort of flying at 100%. But I would still have him there each day. You know, an 80% Stevens I'd have over just about anyone else at the moment. So,
well, I mean, it was, Stevens had an opportunity to shoot from 25 yards after being given
with
the opportunity.
With the exception of Stevens' shooting,
yeah.
Sorry.
But after being given the opportunity to shoot from 25 yards by...
Proper.
Davy Proper. Yeah. And then, so basically, we've got
to
talk...
In fairness to Dale, for him... That was
a good shot.
That was actually a good shot.
Yes. So, okay, I mean, let's talk about the proper red then. Now, Chris Hughton had a couple of different opinions on it, depending on which particular news organisation he was talking to.
Have you got your own teeth in today?
I haven't today.
Oh, okay,
I haven't.
Right.
I need a beer, clearly.
Mm-hmm. You sounded like Alan Hansen.
Yes.
Yeah.
I mean... straight away to the BBC, Chris implied that perhaps it wasn't the ref who made the decision. So I've got no idea what that meant, whether he thought there was
a
Lino
wasn't in a best position. I thought the ref was in a decent enough position.
I think maybe he was talking about the reaction of the players, possibly.
Well, yeah, he went down and he sort of then spun on his backside a bit, didn't he, like a top.
And but then when he was talking to Match of the Day, he was saying it's a decision that will divide opinion. And in the Match of the Day studio, it did. Frank Lampard says, yes, it was. And I can't remember the other
Can we
was.
Wear... It was a Danny Murphy.
Danny Murphy said
Can
it
we
was.
Wear a neutral hat in this studio?
Yeah.
No.
Yeah, I will wear a neutral hat.
Go on, then.
Having looked at it several times now, his foot was high. And on another time, you'll see a yellow card for that, and another time, you'll see a red card for it. But it was a 50-50 challenge. They both went in with their feet, and basically, if you're going to book one, you're going to have to book the other.
I don't think it was a red card at all. It was a yellow at best, and it was quite interesting watching the Seagulls TV version of the game on their highlights. And yeah, the challenge went in, and the commentator sort of made nothing of it.
Mm.
They just, David Proper's gone in there, has been a bit of a coming together. And that's exactly what it was. It was two players both trying to get the ball. Proper, got there first. His foot, he looked under control to me. I don't think it was a reckless challenge. It was one.
Some of those studs were flying, were they?
No, not really. I mean, there's a sort of law of physics about how he can, he's not going to like point his toe like a ballerina going into that when he's trying to.
Well, that's where the studs hit into the grass, and that's where you break your leg.
It was a bit unfortunate. I mean, I don't think if that has been a yellow card, I don't think I don't think we'd be talking about that now.
Weirdly enough,
sure.
if Proper was half a second behind it, then the other fella would have clocked
yes,
him.
Yes, exactly.
I mean, such are the fine margins. That the other fella went in just as did he go in just as aggressively? Were his studs shown? I don't think anyone's really looking at that because it was Proper that caught him. But if you look at that, they both went in just as aggressively as each other.
Yeah, it was an honest attempt by both players to win the ball.
If it was a red card because it was deemed reckless, then both went in reckless. If it was a red card because he was stud showing, which, you know, you can't necessarily say that was. Yes, he caught him, but that was after he got the ball. And you could argue maybe, but that they went, you know, that he went in without due care and attention, but then so did the other fella.
But at the end of the day, I mean, it's all down to opinion, and it was down to the opinion of...
This is the law, I'm afraid. It's in the opinion of the referee.
And, I mean, obviously there was an appeal for it, and the appeal failed, probably because there wasn't enough... It's kind of an umpire's call, isn't it? But, I mean, is there a better way of the appeal process? Because basically we also saw another appeal going this week for Elneny at Arsenal, who got sent off for... shoving someone in the throat, and he got his red card overturned. So,
what? Yeah. Really?
Yeah.
Let's assume, and it's not unreasonable to consider this, that there is a different rule for the top six. There must be. I mean, when we consider Lukaku earlier in the season, it's not us sort of like whinging and whining. Just that there is clearly a different set of rules. Why this is, well, you'd have to ask the FA or the Premier League.
Ashley Young gets away with that challenge on Aguero. In the Manchester derby, and no sanction whatsoever.
Well, the thing is, I think that they are largely guided by what the referee says, and I think the referee has got to consider that he made a clear, not the word obvious, but he's made a clear error. Now, the point is that the fact that we're debating it means that there was a possibility that Rupert's red card was worthy of debate. Now, if the default position is that it was a red card, the only way you can overturn it is there was a clear error. The referee says, under other circumstances, I might not have given a red, but that's different from saying, I got that totally wrong.
We're thinking outside the box here. I mean, is there possibly a precedent for an appeal process where if the manager of the offender wants to appeal it, he speaks to the referee straight after the game, said, yeah, I'm going to appeal this. And say, for instance, both managers and all the officials go and sit in a room. They watch the evidence again there and then.
No, because I think what you've got then is undue pressure being applied to a given person. I think it must be dealt with neutrally.
Well, no, because, I mean, if you've got both managers in there and then you can... and.
I don't think it's unreasonable for a manager to go and talk to the referee after the game if the referee is prepared to actually listen to a voice or an opinion, so long as it's actually given clear and coherently and without prejudice and what have you. But if you have it whereby it's the manager and the referee between them, and the referee is actually then in a room where he's actually subject to possible undue pressure. Now, you know that Chris Hughton wouldn't do this, but pick another manager. Wow, you know. So I think it's right that it's done neutrally.
Okay, straight after the game, you say to the referee, I want to appeal this, and the four officials on the day, they go and watch it immediately, and then they can have...
Well, this is where the referee is already asked by someone else, by whoever it is, the FA or the Premier League.
Well, they'll have the referee's assessor there as well.
Yeah, there are no. But my point is that the referee is asked to actually reassess his own opinion of the incident. So it's done, but it's quite right that it's not done immediately after the game, because, like I say, emotions are high, and it's the club didn't even put in a statement that they were doing it until a day or so later. So it's actually done when everyone's calmed down, everyone's looked at it, everyone realises that there's. So it's right that it's actually done in a good and proper way to do it actually there and then.
Okay, well, can you think of something else then?
I think the way they do it
is more or less all right. Obviously, we're unhappy.
There's no transparency to it.
Because, I mean, again...
Yeah,
I would,
I think you could add some transparency to it where they might publish the findings and the workings behind the decision that they come to. Mm. But I think the way that they actually... I don't think the way they actually do it... I mean, well, obviously, we're unhappy with this particular result... because we think it should have been overturned, but I don't think that necessarily means the process.
I mean, basically what I'm saying is that there's enough element of doubt in the tackle that it would stand. But in other instances, such as Dale Stevens at Middlesbrough, the Tom Hamed incident earlier this season, the incident with Lukaku,
the answer is that we just need to finish in the top six and be a bigger club,
basically.
And this problem goes away.
Yes.
No, you solve the problem.
No, you got this thing. If you're going to take each individual thing on its own merits, and when you actually then compare the lot as a whole, you realise that probably there's certain levels of inconsistency. I mean, like, you know, when Joey Barton stamped on Kyle. And, oh, it was an accident. No, you clearly see it wasn't. And then Hemed does a similar thing the following season. And a couple of seasons later, did Hemed do it accidentally? Well, maybe. But even if he did it accidentally, it still, studs on someone's back.
Except Barton got away with his and didn't get anything.
Well, this is it.
I think what we're doing here, though, we're basically arguing for VAR, aren't we, really?
No, I don't know, because they're still looking at the same... They're looking at imagery. They're looking at pictures of it the same way. So it's not... You can't actually make the red card... Yes, you can make a red card decision there and then, but only if there's a clear... obvious, it's not the word obvious is in there, but a clear error. With something like what Prueba has done and the way he's gone in and things like that, there's just far too much element of doubt. And I think it's right, the referee does actually go for his initial consideration. Whether he's wrong later and then we'll look at it later, then fair enough. Say for the sake of argument, let's go back a few years, Ashley Barnes against Burnley, when you realise that, yes, possibly Barnes should have been sent off, but then so should the other bloke, then maybe you want to look at it. Mm. But there is no consideration for that. There isn't actually a procedure in place that someone can have a retrospective red card.
Okay. Now, Andy, you're a big fan of a lot of American sports. Is there a precedent over there that could maybe be brought in this instance?
Well, what they do in American sport is they replay everything.
and everything takes four days.
And it's really irritating. And this is one of the reasons I'm actually not massively in favour of VAR, particularly like in American football. You can look at a replay for like four to 6 minutes and deciding whether somebody's caught the ball, whether someone's knee has hit the ground or something like that. And it's still not clear.
Mm.
Football doesn't even have the same equivalence. I'm not being funny. These games are long enough. They're 3 hours to begin with, and then you could probably add on another half an hour for faffing around trying to find out whether what at first appears to be a perfectly obvious decision isn't.
Okay, I think in the great scheme of things, if you're looking at the nature of the way the procedures are done, I think that there probably isn't a massively better way. Like I said, I think we could do with some transparency and an idea as to how they arrived at the particular reason that they did. And it would be good to find out. No, we believe that Prueba was reckless, although because there isn't actually a procedure in place that whoever the other bloke was, that he also went in reckless and should have got a yellow card. There isn't a precedent for that. Mm. Sorry, there isn't a procedure for that. And yes, we would then look at it and say, well, at least the other bloke got a yellow. But you can't do that.
Well, one thing we do know is that Davey will be very much missed this weekend at Crystal Palace and again at home to Spurs this week. But it does give an opportunity to another player, which will probably be Baron Kyle. But I mean, we'll
run out of central midfielders.
Yeah, maybe.
That.
Do you think
that Malumbi's going to be called up then to the bench?
Is he fit?
I don't know. It doesn't float my boat.
No. boom tish.
Okay, I mean, but the other thing, just lastly, talking about VAR there, actually, it's interesting that, and I think this is worth talking about, that the Premier League are not actually going to bring it in next year. It's not a surprise that they're not going to do it. Having been at the FSF meeting with them, where they basically sort of did talk about this in very ambivalent terms, never mind that FIFA are doing what they're doing with the World Cup, they're just not satisfied that it's actually as good and strong and appropriate as it could be. So I think they'll look at it again, maybe at Christmas and maybe at the next close season.
They do have it in the German league, in the Bundesliga.
It's still only on trial, though, isn't it?
And well, the players are saying they don't want it, basically.
Yeah, they have it in Italy as well, and it's controversial over there.
Controversy in Italy, surely not.
And do they use it in France as well?
I'm not sure.
But certainly Italy, they don't like it. And
One of the interesting points about it is a bit like cricket. Now, this is where there is an element of crossover between football and cricket, is that with in cricket, and you'll have you'll appeal an umpire's decision, you'll see the whole workings of it on the big screen. And I'm not sure I actually would want that, because what a lot of people are saying is, we want to see VAR being played out on the big screen in the stadium. And that kind of then is almost like a decision by committee or decision by democracy, and it shouldn't be working that way. Plus, there's also the fact that not every Premier League ground has a big screen. Manchester United, for one.
Well, we don't at Hove. You don't see the decision.
No, but you do see the test matches.
But you just see it come up as out or and a spinning bat or whatever.
But yeah. But like I say, at test matches, you do see it. Cause you,
okay,
you...
Look, well, let's move on from that. There are a couple of other points from the game I just need to point out. Can you rearrange this sentence into a sentence that makes sense? Duffy, factory glue.
Go on.
Well, I mean, it was just... It gets worse every time you see it. I mean, it is simply astonishing. Under no real pressure, just one attacker sort of like...
Didn't even look, did he?
Just sort of lolloping over towards him. Meunier was about 10 yards offside.
I know what you mean, yeah.
And, I mean, he just didn't look. He just turned round and it's a perfect pass.
But he's done that before. Do you think just Huddersfield did their homework?
Does Duffy get an assist for that?
He must do. It's an anti-assist.
I'm almost calling it a Duffy own goal.
Well, if you're going to have Lewis dunk actually with all these own goals, then I think that actually Duffy should have that as an own assist.
And I think that the thing about that, it wasn't the fact that we conceded the goal, but the fact that we conceded, we gifted, literally gifted them the goal.
3 minutes after we scored.
I think that was the key to unsettling our nerve on the
on and off the pitch.
It was then, because up until that point, we were absolutely brilliant. We were, you know, what a great start.
First 5 minutes, we were flying.
First 5-10 minutes,
we were in total control.
We got a goal ahead. We had a couple of other sort of half chances, and you thought this game's only going one way. And
we lucked out a little bit with our goal, though, didn't we? I mean, it went in fine. I mean, it's clear that it went over.
Well, we are due an own goal by the opposition goalkeeper.
And I also got
still
the
owed one.
Well, it's actually the last time you saw such a ricket from an opposition goalkeeper was, funnily enough, the Huddersfield Town goalkeeper last season.
Yeah.
And it's also, I believe, the first goal that's been awarded by the goal line technology, specifically the goal line technology. Yeah. You can see the referee put his arm up, pointed to his wrist and said,
Lursall
sorry,
had a pretty good game.
It wasn't, actually. There was another one this season.
Was it?
Yeah, I can't remember where it was. I remember,
I'm talking about the Amex. This is the first time the technology has been introduced this season, isn't it?
So I'll have to come back to you on that one. Okay, well, moving on from that one. Earlier this week on Tuesday night, Rise UK will be having a collection campaign. Who are Rise?
It's probably actually easier to explain. Earlier this week, Alex and Nicola from Rise, a women's domestic abuse charity, they came by the studio and we had a natter about what it is they're up to.
I've got to say, this is outside the normal kind of editorial remit of what we actually have on The Raw, but so what's the link here between Rise and the Albion?
Okay, so we've been chosen as Brighton Hove Albion's charity partner for the season, and we'll have a presence at the match day on Tuesday the 17th of April when Albion take on Tottenham Hotspur.
For those who aren't familiar with this, tell us what Rise is, tell us the history of it and what it's about.
So Rise is a domestic abuse charity based in Brighton and Hove. We provide services to people affected by domestic abuse. So we have a local helpline, we have a refuge, we have counselling and support services for families, and we also have an LGBT refuge and service.
Right. So within this, within the charity itself, obviously, this is a citywide thing. It's not a nationwide. This is specifically a Brighton and Hove.
This is a Brighton and Hove based charity.
Okay.
Yeah.
So why have the Albion chosen Rise as one of their favoured charities this year?
I think, lots of people apply to be the Albion's Charity of the Year because obviously it gives you like a massive visibility and a chance to connect with a passive audience of about 30,000 people. I think that one of the reasons we were chosen is because we'd read through their supporter charter. We really tapped into the fact that Albion pride themselves on being a family club. And they were really keen for us to actually try and engage with supporters rather than just turn up on the concourse and ask for money. We're actually going to be getting people to tweet domestic abuse is everybody's business.
Sure. So what is it what's the big message that you want to get out there? Because, like I say, you're doing the charity takeover for the Spurs game, but there's obviously a big and important message that you want to get out there. Finally want to do the Twitter handle thing, that's great, but there is a bigger message to be had. So what's that then, Nicola?
We want to pitch domestic abuse as something that isn't seen as just a women's issue. It's something that's everybody's business. So in the past, I'm sure everyone remembers a time when they thought that if something was happening, it was private, it was between two people, it was just a domestic. But actually, we all have a responsibility to speak out if we see something that we think isn't right. And if you're worried about a friend, rather than just keep that fear inside, it's really important to reach out and ask them if they're okay.
Okay. And Alex, I mean, there's historically been research undertaken whereby football not has a responsibility, but it has, there's been a link between, say, for England losing or not doing well in the World Cup and a rise. You know, there has been a direct correlation. One, is that still there? And two, what does Rise do about that to help that?
Well, I suppose it is still there, but actually, equally, the research has shown that whether your game win or loses, there's often a rise in domestic abuse. I suppose what we do for it, well, we can be there as a support in the community. And this is why it's great to get out with Brighton Hove Albion, because we're very aware, like, the majority of people don't do this to their partners. But I think it's often that, kind of going back what to Nicola said, people often scared about if someone came to them and disclosed, oh, this is happening to me, people go, oh, I don't know what to do, like, how do I help? And it can actually be really simple. It can just be as much as just listening and not judging, you know, maybe talking about the behaviour of the person that might be a perpetrator, not judging the person themselves, and also pointing them towards Rise services.
Yeah, and just being patient with them as well, because there's a misconception that if someone discloses they're in an abusive relationship, your instinct can be to try and talk them out of that relationship as quickly as possible, whereas actually leaving abusive relationship can be incredibly dangerous and it can be an incredibly difficult thing to do. So it's a case of listening, supporting, signposting them to organisations like Rise who can help them leave safely.
So if someone does actually, I mean, if this is something that strikes a chord with people and this is actually something, yes, I do know of this or I suspect this and what have you, you're saying that Rise is a place that people can come to. How would they do that?
So they can call our helpline number. The phone number for Rise is 0300 323 9985, and people also can find more information on our website, which is riseuk.org.uk. And for this campaign, if you add /everyone's business, that will take you to information about what to do in a situation, what signs you can spot, and how to help someone if you're worried about them.
Because I think it might be sort of considered a little bit counterintuitive that if you suspect something's going on, you wouldn't immediately call the police. So is that something that you actually consider saying is good advice as well? I mean, or does it depend on the nature of the individual circumstance?
No, absolutely. We always say that emblazoned across the top of our website, above our helpline number, is if you're in immediate danger, call the police. We're there to provide support, guidance, emotional support. Should someone decide to leave, we provide crisis accommodation, but that's not necessarily instant. So we do always say to people, if you're in danger, phone 999.
I think that the public perception of domestic abuse is often considered one way, from men to women. But in your experience, that, you know, it can happen in all directions, from any given way, and not necessarily just within two people. So how does Rise deal with all of these issues?
Well, Rise's remit is gender-based violence, violence towards women from men. That's not to say that we don't acknowledge that it works the other way as well, and women can be abusive towards men. If someone discloses that they're a victim of abuse and they're a male, we just signpost them to our partner organisation.
Okay.
So if they contact the portal, they'll get directed to one of our partners. Who we're just not specialists in female to male violence.
Okay. So when the Albion fans come to the game on Tuesday against Spurs, what is it they can expect? And obviously there's the buckets being shaken, but what's the message that you're specifically getting out there on the day? I understand you're being interviewed at half time as well.
Yeah, so we're lucky enough to have a signed shirt and a signed football, obviously signed by the promotion winning squad, which is fantastic.
Yeah.
So fans can win one of the shirts, win a shirt or one of the balls by taking part in a penalty shootout on the concourse, or they can tweet domestic abuse is everybody's business, everyone's business. Sorry.
Yeah, hashtag everyone's business.
Hashtag everyone's business.
Yes.
And on Thursday, we'll be totting up everyone who's used that hashtag. We'll be picking two lucky people at random. As you say, there's also going to be an interview at half time with Ali Gold, who is a survivor of domestic abuse. We're getting to show two films, well, a film on either screen at the end of the pitch. And we're also going to have our text to donate number going round on the mid-tier advertising boards, aren't we?
Yes, so we're everywhere.
So that phone number again, if you suspect that a loved one is being abused, is
0300 323 9985, or you can go to our website on riseuk.org.uk.
Alex and Nicola of Rise, thank you very much indeed for coming on to the Albion Raw.
Yeah, so, I mean, they will be shaking buckets at the Amex on Tuesday night ahead of the...
Big message that domestic violence is hashtag everyone's business. So go to their website and go to the Twitter account and actually just show acknowledgement and appreciation for what it is they're doing. And like I say, with the shake of the buckets, then, yeah, it's always good that they can get an extra few quid to help their organisation assist people across the city.
Okay, well, you are listening to the Albion Raw here on Radio Reverb, 97.2 FM, online at radioreverb.com, on DAB, and, of course, on our podcast. We are, as usual, delighted to be brought to you in association with oldfootballshirts.com, and thank you, Phil.
Well, this is Phil. He's actually chosen another shirt of the week here, which he's given to AD with a printout of that's either blue or black or green or whatever it is. And what we've got here is something that's another revolting shirt.
It's horrible, but it's Greek.
It's, yeah, it probably is actually. I think it probably says Lotto there, doesn't it? So it's a kind of a goldy coloured shirt. It looks like actually someone's weed on it with some tyre tracks that actually look like stripes from a distance. Like I say, it's possibly it says Lotto on there. He's either your bad printing mate, or it's he's photoshopped out the badge. But that's certainly a Greek.
It's not actually a great image on
okay,
on the
fine. Well, what's Phil giving us this week?
Well, here you go then. For no particular reason, this is the 2013-2014 home shirt of Greek Tiersou side Ergoteles FC. They are known as Kritiki, the Cretans, and they hail from Heraklion, the capital of the island. Of Crete, and they are one of two Heraklion sides who play in the Super League, which is the top level of Greek football. Currently they play in the Greek Football League and stage their home games at the 26,240 capacity Pankritio Stadium. Thank you.
This is going to go
so bad, isn't it? A bit of politics for you then. During the Greek military junta in the late 60s and early 70s, the government determined that every city in Greece should have one professional football team. At that time, both Ergoteles and their rivals Omilios Philathion played in the second division at the end of the 66-67 season. Despite both clubs finishing well above the relegation zone, Ergoteles was relegated to the amateur leagues by law. Current players include the Belgique striker Hugo Kuipers, who plays alongside USA forward Joseph Effort. But you don't want to hear about that one, do you? How about defender Kyriakos Mazakouglis or defender Ilias Treselios?
He's making this up now, isn't he?
Notable former players include Lithuanian winger Delvidos Kreskunakis, and let's not forget Guy Butters, who had a loan spell there in 2003.
Really? Really?
Apparently so.
I think he's made that one up, actually. Yeah. And I bet you Frutos was there once upon a time as well. Yeah. Or Sebastian Carroll or Pickle. Yeah, but Butters was there.
Oh, you know.
Well, I know this is Peter Brackley's gag, isn't it? He said, Guy Butters, when he was playing, he looked like a Greek god. Nowadays, he's like a Greek restaurant.
But, Guy Butters has appeared on the Albion Raw Down Under this week as well.
Yes, he has. Do tune into that. So it's on Audio Boom, which if you go into Audio Boom for the first time, just hit our Albion Raw channel. You'll find plenty of our stuff. I think it's actually the 50th podcast of the season. So that's us and Richie Down Under. Interviewing Paul Reid with mystery guest Guy Butters.
Oh, well, never mind.
Never mind.
But what else is on the notice board, Al?
Well,
The Renf season continues apace, and Friday the 11th of May at the Dripping Pan, it's the last football weekend of the season. Brighton and Hove Albion fans will be playing Crystal Palace fans for the huge honour of winning the Robert Eaton Memorial Fund Trophy. It's the 17th annual charity match. Please do come along. It's a fiver to get in. We're still looking for a referee. We're still looking for some ringers. I mean, we were in the pub yesterday and we were just going through basically with Dean's alumni yesterday, weren't we, Odie? And the number of players that I don't know what Bob Booker and all these various managers did to them, but so many of them are basically broken. We asked Bob Booker, he's got a titanium knee. We've got Adam Virgo, who's got probably a concrete knee. We've got, you know, anyone, the rest of them. It's, yeah, so if you can think of someone who used to play it with Dean and isn't basically broken, they might get a 20-minute run out at the Dripping Pan on the Friday the 11th of May. But that's not an excuse not to turn up, so we'll see you there.
Funny enough, Al, I can think of someone who used to play it with Dean.
Go on.
There's a bloke, he's a Spurs fan, who we're playing on Tuesday, yeah. And his name is Gary Hart.
Have you had a natter with him lately?
I have had a natter with him, Al, and I asked him what he thinks of the Albion's first season in the Premier League.
Well, obviously, you know, we always knew it was going to be tough. I keep a good eye out, even though I'm officially a Spurs supporter. But I do keep a massive eye out on Brighton, and I think they've done magnificently, especially first part of the season. You know, they picked up enough points, and to be fair, if they win Saturday, they're safe.
Well, in my
eyes, they're safe.
But obviously, we're playing Crystal Palace on Saturday. You know as well as anyone else about the needle that's involved in those sort of games. So tell us a little bit about the preparation that goes into a game against Palace and derby games in particular, and what those games meant to you.
Looking back, I remember a couple of games that come to mind. Obviously, the 1-0 win up there in our nice white kit when I think Paul McShane scored the header.
Did he?
I remember that specifically because...
Did he, though?
Was it probably, yeah, it was an own goal, wasn't it, or something?
Well, McShane claimed it, but yeah, it definitely came off the shoulder.
Anyway, well, I don't think we cared much. But I just remember that night, because I think, is that the night we went down to 10 men, and I think I had to play right back. I think I was playing in defence that day. I can't remember. I remember playing right back, and I remember not enjoying it too much.
That's you were pretty much versatile, though, weren't you?
Yeah, I was a yes man. I'd play wherever I had to play at the end of the day, but you know, everyone has their favourite positions. Right back weren't one of them, but if it means me playing on a Saturday and a Tuesday, I don't mind playing.
That's absolutely. So I mean, obviously that one nil game was the last time we won at Selhurst, and so we probably owe them one, don't we?
Yeah, because I especially remember the one where I think we were, I can't remember what the scores at half time, but we were getting absolutely hammered by Palace. I think it was like 3 or 4 nil at half time. That was at Selhurst Park.
Yeah, the game where we lost 5-0. Yeah,
dive into a little hole somewhere. It was at 5-0. Yeah, that weren't a good.
Yeah,
day.
that was a game where we did get someone sent off. Paul Brooker got sent off in that
was
one.
Was it?
Steve Coppell's first games for us.
Weren't a good day, was it?
Well, we had Paul Rogers on the show at one point, and he said that he came on in that game as a substitute, and Coppell said to him, he came on at 5-0 down, and he said, "Don't let this get out of hand."
I remember him saying that. I remember Paul Rogers saying that, actually, to us. Like, we have a little giggle after, and not straight after the game, because we were devastated, but like little things people say after games and like memories, and you do say some stupid things sometimes.
Yeah,
I remember that. That weren't a good day.
So when you look at these games against Palace, you know what it means to the supporters. I mean, is the preparation any different to any other game, or is it just business as usual as far as you're concerned?
No. I've been a supporter, obviously, Spurs as well, so I know what it's like to be on the other side. And to be honest, there's no different preparation at all. If you you should be up and wanting to win every single game, you know, 100%. It's just because it's Palace, or it could be Burton Albion or something like that, or Aldershot Town or something, but you should still be up just as much to win the game. So I don't see that side of things, to be honest, about being up for it more because it's a Palace game. They want to win it, obviously, because it's the local derby. Mm. And also, it could secure safety in the Premier League.
Well, that's the most important thing. There is a school of thought that there might be enough points on the board already. I don't look at it that way, especially with the running we've got, continues with a game against Spurs on Tuesday night, Gary.
Yes, that's going to be a difficult one for me.
Obviously, are you going to make it
Spurs
down?
Win the Champions. No, I don't really get to the games. I'm working so much at the minute with... obviously my own little business and stuff like that. So, you know, that comes first at the end of the day. So I'll probably leave that one. I just watch it. It's not on the telly or nothing. I've done
it. I believe it is, yeah.
But I'll be listening to it on the radio. It is.
I believe so.
I'll hook somewhere up. I'll be in the pub then. I can never say that as a Brighton player. Now I can say I'll definitely be in the pub somewhere.
So has any Brighton player particularly impressed you this season?
What I've seen, obviously Glenn Murray, you know, my old favourite, even though he don't talk to me much anymore. You know, he's Premier League now. He don't talk to anyone anymore. But no, I've spoke to him a little while ago. He sent me a shirt for a charity. So I think he's done magnificent. You know, he's getting on a bit, but he's still scored the goals that probably will keep us up this year. You know, Gross has done really well. Ryan, the goalkeeper, I think he's... I know he comes under a little bit of scrutiny about some of the... He's made some mistakes, but he's also kept some great saves, like the penalty saves and stuff like that. So, as a team, I think they look very strong.
Yeah,
football-wise...
Go on.
Football-wise, they're above half the teams in that Premier League, the way they play football. So, you know, if you do that, you've got every chance.
Now, when I spoke to you we call it the victory parade, you weren't so sure about how we were going to get on this year. So, I mean, obviously you're pleasantly surprised to see us. As it stands at the moment, we could still get relegated, but we're still on course for our highest ever placing. Work that one out.
Yeah, well, I am sometimes glass half full, you know, and sometimes I'm glass half empty. So I'm very on the edge. Sometimes I like to think the worst. So anything else is a bonus. And I wasn't going to say, yeah, because I'm an ex-Brighton player and I support Brighton as well. I would definitely stand up. I was being a little bit more on the fence. But no, they've proved me wrong at the end of the day. I generally thought we'd be very close to going down. Only because of squad money that you get to spend, squad rotations and stuff like that. But Chris Hewitt has done unbelievable with the squad he's got. And obviously, they're bought really, really well. You know, not many Premier League teams, you can say that about. You know, a lot of people just panic buy and it doesn't get them out of trouble. But Brighton have bought really, really well.
Yeah, the recruitment team's been absolutely fantastic.
Credit to the club. Credit to the club. Because they've done it and, you know, that's what they deserve.
Okay. Now, Garrett, you've been out of the game a little while now. When you look back on your career now, what are the particular highlights? What stands out for you more than anything?
I don't know. Do you know what? I think it's just being around that football environment, you know, around friends, around colleagues and going to the away games. I used to love staying overnight. You know, everyone says particular matches, but I just generally love to be a footballer. You know, we weren't on the Premiership wages, you know, we weren't on massive wages, but we loved our job and we just got on with it. And I just thought the atmosphere and the players I got to meet and play with and friends were just amazing. And that's, I always tell people that ask me now, because I tell little stories to kids about careers. They always ask. And that's what I say. I say it's a fantastic job to get into, whether you're earning loads of money or no money at all. It's still an amazing thing to do.
Well, the Brighton teams...
And it was my dream, so...
Yeah, I mean, the Brighton teams you played in were notoriously a very, very tight-knit bunch.
We had to be. You know, everyone knows we didn't have the money back then. Like, you know, they've got money to fly around now and stuff like that and pay big wages. But, you know, we were rough... Maybe raw around the edges, but we knew how to play like a team and we knew how to get results when we had to. You know, I know we went down a couple of times, but we bounced back. To be honest, that added to my career. I like looking at my stats in my career, like promotions and relegation. Now we're like to relegation, but at least I've got it. At least I can say I've done it all.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
It weren't
boring.
When we look back on it now, I mean, we look back at the 20-year journey from nearly going out of business to making it the Premier League.
You know,
it's something which we had to fight tooth and nail for. And, you know, when we get asked constantly about how do you look at the last 10 years or whatever, we said, no, we look at 20 years ago. We very nearly didn't have a club. Now, you were very, very much part of that journey. Obviously you played at Gillingham, of course, at with Dean, and you did actually score the very first goal at the Amex.
I know. People keep saying it wasn't the league goal. I said, I don't care. I scored the first goal. At the end of the day, that's the first one that went in one of them nets.
Yeah, it was.
Which was a massive thing for me because, as we know, I don't score many. My stats are not great, but...
You scored enough.
At the end of the day, I've done all right for me. I probably missed a lot more than I scored. But generally, as you was going on about the club and how far it's come, even when they signed me, they had no money. It was, you know, literally got the £1,000 together and the kit because they had no money whatsoever. And you're coming from that to where they are now. It's just unbelievable. It's a massive turnaround. It's a massive people that love the club, that invest their money into the club, all the players they bought in. You know, because there was a time that where the Great Escape, we could have been in a different league and we might not have been in the situation, you know, that we was in to make the Premier League this early.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's loads of different angles, but it all worked out well.
It's funny you should mention the Great Escape there, Gary. We believe it or not, here at the Albion Roar, we've got a sister show now called the Albion Roar Down Under. And the special guest on that show this week was one Lloyd Owusu, who spoke glowingly about you.
I've got him on my Instagram. I always see him on Facebook, Instagram, like his stuff and stuff like that. I don't speak to him, but I didn't really know him that well. Like, he just come in. I'd never sort of met him before. It was just amazing that two old people just come together for one last time, last 10 games of the season. a little coxy.
Yeah, it was amazing because it was a proper Indian summer for you, wasn't it? I mean, you just
crazy.
Managed to pull all your form back. I mean, when you look back,
it's crazy. It was
actually, I mean, when you look back at it, your career, I mean, you had that crucial leg break at Peterborough.
Yeah,
and you maybe lost a yard from that.
I think so, yeah. I'd never deny that as well. I did. I felt like I lost a yard after that because I was out a long time. And then I started picking up injuries, you know, once a year. And that's when, as soon as you do that, any player does that, it feels like it's going away from you.
Yeah, so to come back and have that end of the season where basically you were the star player. You know, you had to have cortisone injections and God knows what else to get you out there because you.
I know what it was. I know what it was, and I shouldn't advertise this at the minute because of what's going on. But it was Red Bull. I invested in Red Bull for that last week, and it got me through it. But obviously, I know you're not allowed to buy that anymore. But no, that's what we were talking about a minute ago about memories.
Yeah,
that's the sort of memories that always stick in my mind. Them 10 games or 9 games, like with Fraser doing the little overhead kick and just little bits like that. It's just, that's what was sticking in my mind all the time. Not Millennium. Millennium was a good thing, but it's them Great Escape moments. Cause I've got a big poster on my wall every time I go in the house. It's right in front of me. So I always see the Great Escape poster.
So it's
amazing times.
So tell us a little bit about what you're doing now, Gary.
I've worked like bits and pieces. I've done a few bits for Spurs. We've done like a little bit for Spurs Academy, but I've recently left that. Too much stuff, and I work for Bishop Stortford, and I do private one-on-ones, just trying to give everything back. And I find myself using a lot that Gus used to give me.
Right.
Or Gus Poyet, what he used to obviously train us. So I've used a lot of what he used to do because I believed in him a load. So I loved what he'd done.
So was he the best manager you think you
worked under?
Amazing
what you pick up and you pass on.
Was he the best manager you worked under?
His general idea. I couldn't pick one. Honestly, Steve Cotter was amazing. Like for me personally as a winger.
Well, I mean, Kerry always says Steve Cotter, but he resurrected his.
He was
career.
A mastermind.
But then you
he was a mastermind. Gus was precise and interesting, and you could have a good laugh with him as well. He was like one of the lads as well.
Mm.
Steve Cotter was like, you wouldn't see him on the training ground. You'd listen. If you didn't listen, you wouldn't learn, basically. And he'd know you're not listening, but you wouldn't see him after the game. He'd be gone. So yeah. I enjoyed Gus and the way Gus let me go, obviously, when he said he was about to sort of release me, was just amazing. Like, for someone of that high profile, just to talk to me the way he did, not just go, look, we don't want you, you're off. He took his time and he just took his time and made me feel so calm, and I just accepted it. I was like, thank you very much, shook my hand, sat there with him for a little while, had a chat. And that's the way a manager should be. You know, you'd have to be ruthless. You just have to let people down nicely. And that's why I've got so much respect for Gus.
Okay.
But all my other managers were decent, to be fair.
I mean, do you see the same sort of qualities in someone like Chris Hughton?
I don't know Chris Hughton that well. I've never worked under him.
Apart from watching him on the terraces at Spurs, presumably.
Yeah, you can tell he's a nice gentleman and he knows what he's talking about. He hasn't done the job, and everywhere he's been, if you're a bad manager, he knows exactly what he's talking about. And Brighton have got to do well to keep hold of a manager like that because, you know, someone of that high stature will be on the lookout on other people's radars. So hopefully Brighton can keep hold of him.
Okay. Well, let's just talk a little bit about Spurs then, because obviously we got it's a massive game for us come Tuesday. I mean, the Palace game's first, and the most important one is always the next one. But firstly, with Spurs, obviously playing their home games at Wembley this season, you've gone on record as saying that you've been a massive Spurs fan and you never hid from that, especially when we played them in the Cup all those years ago.
No, I'm definitely a Spurs fan.
But, I mean, do you think it's correct that they are playing the FA Cup semi-final at Wembley?
It is correct because it's their home ground. But what I don't agree with is semi-finals being played at Wembley, if you get what I mean. I don't get that. It should be the final at Wembley Stadium, not the semi-finals, because that's a load of rubbish in my book. The whole idea of getting to a big final is to get to the final.
Yeah, but I mean, that is correct.
Else.
I mean, but because it's the FA Cup semi-final is meant to be played on a neutral ground, it's not a neutral ground. They've played there all season.
Yeah, that's a difficult thing. Personally, as a Spurs fan, I want it there because if they put it somewhere like Old Trafford, we'd probably get hammered. So,
they could put it at the Emirates, they could put it at Stamford Bridge, Amex. They could put it
bring it down to the Amex, couldn't they?
They could bring it down to the Amex, but I mean, other grounds are available. You know, it should be a neutral ground. But
I think you're asking the wrong person here. I'm well happy with being at Wembley.
So Spurs are on course for the Champions League, of course, as well.
Yeah, I think that's pretty safe. I'm hoping that the new Spurs got this weekend. I can't remember who they got.
Pass.
I can't remember now, but I'm hoping Brighton are safe. They win against Palace, and I hope Tottenham win. And they're in the Champions League, cemented it, so we can just go and have a nice friendly 1-1 draw. That'd be nice.
You're sitting on the fence there, mate.
Yeah, always sit on the fence. Okay. Nice 1-1 draw, everyone's happy, and we all drink together in the pub after.
Well, that sounds like a plan, and I mean, that is certainly something we're going to have to do next time you're down in Brighton, Gary. So many thanks for your time, and we look forward to catching up with you very, very soon.
That was Gary Hart, who I was having a chat with earlier this week. He hasn't changed, has he?
You've got to love that fella. You've just got to love that
diamond.
Fella.
Diamond. Absolute diamond.
Geezer.
What were your favourite Harty memories?
Well, there are loads, actually. But I think the one that actually sticks out for me is not actually a game we won. but it was the great Salad escape season. And when we were, I think it was Swindon Town at home. It was, I think Slade had just come in as the manager, and we were losing 2-0, and Swindon were top of the league. I think they were going to get promoted that week and that season. And Harty came on for like the last 15, 20 minutes, and it just dragged us back into the game. And like, I think we had zero expectation. It might have actually been his first game back properly then, and he only had a few minutes, but just energised the team, really got the whole team going.
That was the first game he played with Owusu, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think it might have been. We got a goal back. We still lost. I think we lost 2-1. But you walked out of that game thinking, you know what? This might not be hopeless after all. And, you know, I don't think you can overestimate the impact that Harty and Owusu had in that season. But I think Harty is just amazing. It was so unexpected. He was back from long-term injury, you know, no one really expected anything of him, and it was just such a catalyst, and it was brilliant because he was my first ever favourite Brighton player.
All right.
So from my, the early seasons that I watched the Albions when after I moved down from London, there's the sort of player you could watch day in, day out. Just a proper pro, will run his socks off, and is just a lovely bloke, an absolute diamond of a geezer.
It's interesting. He was talking about Gus Poyet during that there, because, you know, Poyet has said to other people, you know, he points to Harty and says, that bloke, I'd rather have 11 Gary Harts in my team, because they're low maintenance, they're professional, they're proper, they're decent. I say they're good people. I mean, if you're going to talk about a favourite Harty moment, I think that actually if Harty himself is going to say that his favourite time was actually that Great Escape season, then someone's going to tell me who we're playing against. But I've got it vividly in my mind. We're on the south stand with Dean. We're kicking towards the railway end, and Harty puts a cross in where he could have shot the ball, had a shot himself, crossed it for Owusu, who headed it, diving header, hit the keeper, and as it comes back out to him,
Owusu's still on the floor. He could have done anything. He just let it hit his head and trundle in. So it was actually a header that was probably about half an inch off the floor.
Wasn't that Blackpool or something?
No, it wasn't. I remember it. It was absolutely genius.
Absolutely. But then also, I mean, for those that were there, and I wasn't there, but for those that were there, it was one of those sort of, you know, where you're cheering a goal and you feel that you can elevate.
As soon as you mentioned that, I knew what you were going to say about Owusu heading it in.
Yeah, from about an inch off the ground. But the other one is and I wasn't there, but is the way at Bristol Rovers. I think we won 2-1. Calvin Andrew played, but Harty was on the whole lot, you know. And
that was
and
the overhead place was kick kicking. Tommy Fraser scored.
No, that was at Hereford.
Oh, you're right.
That was at Hereford. No, that was the whole place was a buzz, and you cheer so much you feel you could actually just jump 10 feet tall.
Yeah, the Bristol Rovers game was key.
Yes. Yeah. There was so there's that. There were some magic moments in that time, and he's right. In the 20-year journey, there were so many what ifs. Like for instance. If we'd have gone down that season, you know, Gus Poyet ultimately would have ended up taking over a third division club. Other ifs include if we hadn't, you know, we could have actually gone and had Chris Hughton taking over a third division club. There's so many times when we could have really, get that wrong. Poyet could have taken over a fourth division club. Sorry, not a third division, because we were at the bottom of the third division. So there's so many ifs and buts. And as the point you pointed out there, Harty played a major part of that journey, and it's fabulous that he did. When you see him having signed with his Donatello blue and white striped shirt and his curtain hairdo, you know, to the sort of the old man of rock and roll by the time he knocked in that 6-yard header or whatever it was in the first game at the Amex, you know, and all points in between, the bloke is clearly a hero.
He is an absolute hero. And, you know, I mean, I look back to other times as well, not just that.
When he used to score goals.
Well, yeah, I mean, there was the goal against Cardiff. There was the goal with Dean when we won 1-0. Goal against, I think it's Tranmere, possibly.
Last minute one against Leeds, to where he sort of knocked it in from a very sort of narrow
goal. There was a goal at Wolves. There was loads.
Well, he only got 45 first-team goals. That's the weird thing. I mean, he was I think a couple of seasons, he was the leading scorer until Bobby turned up. And then after that, he was kind of provider. But then he did play midfield. He played, as he said, played right back. Hated it. Played left wing. I mean, he was just there. He was your manager's go-to person who can actually then slot in anywhere. And I think in a pre-season friendly, was it, he actually played in goal as well. So
he might well have done. He played everywhere else. But
absolutely. So but he's every Brighton fan who watched him play will remember him with fondness. Will know, you know, and all right, he's going to be sort of half Sporting, half Brighton, half Spurs on Tuesday. But, you know, so what? You can't actually change a fella's personality for the sake of, you know, you can't change. Literally, you can't change his heart.
Oh, I see what you did.
I didn't mean that, but yeah.
I think we should just leave that one there.
Yeah,
I think,
no, fair
we?
Enough, yeah.
Okay, well, thank you very much for listening. Thank you to Alan Wares, and thank you to Andy Bass. I've been Aidy Pack, and you've also been listening to Gary Hart. This has been the Albion Roar. We'll see you again next week.
Kiss me goodnight and say my prayers. Leave the lights on at the top of the stairs. Tell me the names of the stars up in the sky. Tree taps on a window pane, that feeling smothers me again. Daddy, is it true that we all have to die? At the top of the stairs is darkness. At the top of the stairs is darkness. And when I looked, your name was in the memorial book. And what had become of all the things we planned? I accepted the commiserations of all your friends and your relations, but there's some things I still don't understand. Thank you. some photographs of a summer's day, a little boy's lifetime away, is all I've left of everything we've done. Like a pale moon in a sunny sky, death gazes down as I pass by to remind me that I'm but my father's son. I offer up to you